morning and welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Liz Hoffman, your host of the show. Faith and Family is underwritten by our friends at Concordia University, Wisconsin. So we want you to be sure and check out their website. They have a lot of great things to offer. We have a link to Concordia on our website, kfuo.org. Well, this week on the show, we're discussing the topic of adoption. We'll talk about everything from the process of how to adopt a child to legality issues, and we'll also visit with some special parents and kids who are now a family thanks to adoption. Now, we'd like you to remember that you, our listeners, get to be a part of the show. You can call in or email your questions and comments for our expert every day. You can call or email anytime during the show. The number's in St. Louis, 314-505-7850, or outside of St. Louis, 800-730-2727. You can also email your questions or comments to family at kfuo.org. So let's jump into this week's subject. And all week here on Faith and Family, we're talking about the joys of adoption. Our guest today is Reverend Alan Erdman and Debbie Shallon, Director of Child Welfare Department in St. Louis. And Reverend Alan Erdman is the President and CEO of Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri. Thank you both so much for joining us today on Faith and Family.
It's nice being here, Liz.
Thank you. We're happy to have you on this day after Easter, and we got sunshine and a beautiful start to our week. There's so many beautiful children of God who are out there that are they're wanting to be loved. They're giggly. They're eager to learn. But, you know, most of all, they just want to be loved. And thanks to people like you all and Lutheran Family and Children's Services, connections are being made every day, and children are given a chance at a wonderful future. Most people are familiar with adoption, but maybe, Debbie, can you give us a more clear definition of adoption? Maybe how it's deeper than just a simple definition, I guess.
Right. I don't think a definition can actually define the different types of adoption. What it really is finding a forever home for someone where they can grow up in a family, feel loved and secure.
That's great. I mean, and that's absolutely right. And Alan, what would you say are some of the biggest joys of adoption for the parents and children as well?
Well, I'll tell you one of my greatest joys, and that is when we do entrustment ceremonies where the baby is moved out of foster parents' home into the home of the adopting family. Is first we light a candle for the biological mother and pray for her, and then we light a candle for the foster mom and pray for her, and then we light a final candle and pray for this new family that's coming together. And that just really is always a great moment for me, because I always thought I'd get to be like Charlton Heston, you know, in the Ten Commandments, and hold these babies and say blessings over them and all this stuff. And I learned right away that the second I hand you a baby and say, this is your new son or daughter, they'll never let me touch that kid again. But it's a powerful moment when you watch a family come together. It's a joyful, and it's God's business. It's God doing business to take care of kids, and it's really just a fantastic moment.
That's wonderful, and I love that you say that you also light a candle for the birth mother, you're not forgetting her.
No, absolutely. Matter of fact, we've had a couple birth mothers sit in adoptions recently that I've been in.
We've had several, and that's one of the trends that has changed over the years in adoption, mm-hmm. is that it's much more open. And along with the birth mother being able to choose the adoptive parents, which that's been happening for 25 years, now they are building a relationship, and they have the opportunity to. So if they choose to meet the adoptive parents, they can, and many times they bond immediately. And then she participates in that entrustment ceremony where she is actually holding the baby, and then she will hand the baby to the adoptive parents.
Wow, that's really something.
Yeah, matter of fact, a year ago on Ash Wednesday, we had a set of twins that were adopted at the agency. And I'll never forget this, because after we lit the first candle for the biological mom, the biological mom handed her daughter to this new family and said, this is your new daughter. And then when we lit the second candle, she handed the little baby boy to the father and said, this is your new son. I mean, you could just pass the Kleenex out after that.
Oh, yeah.
It was a neat moment.
Wow, that's really something. And that's wonderful, twins. they can still be adopted. That's
yeah. Probably the other thing we need to say, Liz, is that for, and it's predominantly mothers, when they put babies up for adoption, they are the most courageous people I can think of. You know, that to really be able to say somebody else can raise my child better than me is a very courageous and
selfless.
Thank you, Debbie. Act. You know, that, and these mothers want the very best for their kids, you know, as we all do as parents, but it's amazing to watch them get to that point where they actually say, I want to do this for the sake of my child.
And I would like to add to what Alan said that I would like the message to be that people really understand these are not women or young women that are leaving their babies someplace. They don't love them. They want to get out there and do whatever they're doing. These are people who are making a plan for their baby because their pregnancy was unexpected and they are trying to do the right thing. They know that they want more for their child than what they can provide. And so carrying the baby full term and going through adoption is a difficult thing, and we have great workers that work with these women, and I just cannot applaud the birth mothers enough because they are being very selfless and saying that I choose you to raise my child, and you now will be the new parents. And that's just a, you know, that's where you see God working, because the adoptive parents have been waiting a long time, and it's a hard wait because you just so want to be chosen and it's out of your control. But yet when they are chosen, they always say, now I understand. Now I get why I had to wait, because my baby wasn't born yet. This is the one that was supposed to come to us.
That's very well said. And in a world where, you know, abortion is just so easy for anyone almost, mm-hmm. that, yeah, it's, you know, the numbers are just staggering and terrible. And, those mothers that choose life and want a better life for their child, they should be applauded. Yeah, that's wonderful. What would you guys say about who should adopt? What type of person?
Somebody with a big heart. And it's interesting because adoption is not a matter of just finances. It's a matter of we look for people who will be good Christian parents. And when a family gets ready to adopt, they put together a portfolio, and all the portfolios are the same number of pages and have the same information in it. But then all the portfolios are given to the biological mother, and she usually picks the family that her baby is going to go into. And it always fascinates me as to how they make these decisions, because now this is going to sound strange coming from a Lutheran pastor, but a bunch of years ago we had a Lutheran pastor who was applying for adoption. I thought, who's ever going to pick them? You know? Yeah, I know. Watch the phone lines light up now. And lo and behold, the first mother that was shown their portfolio picked them because a Lutheran pastor had helped her grandfather when he came to America. And she said, if a Lutheran pastor would help my grandfather, a Lutheran pastor would be wonderful to raise my baby.
Wow.
And so the motivations of people are very interesting and unpredictable as to why they pick certain families for certain things.
It is. You know, I tell people when they're getting their profile ready to add pictures of things that they actually do. I don't want stiff pictures up against a blank wall. I want, if you like to go to Cardinals games, or if you garden, or you ride bikes, or on Christmas morning, or carving pumpkins, whatever it is that you do, put that in there, because that, especially for the birth parents that may not choose to meet you, mm-hmm. that's the only thing they will get to see, to kind of see into your personality. And it's all non-identifying, so it will have their first names but not their last. It will talk about what kind of church they go to but not the, you know, the exact name of the church. It will right. talk about the type of job they have but not where. So it's unidentifying, but it really lets you in on who they are and what their personalities are like.
That's great. Now, what about for the parents that are, I guess, picking a child. Is there, I guess, counseling available, or how does a parent not feel guilty for you pick one by a picture and then not the other? How does that work?
Well, I'll just say a couple things, and then I'm sure Debbie's got a good slant on this, and that is, I can't say enough about our child welfare staff that when you adopt, it's just not a matter of giving you a baby and saying best wishes, that the follow-up of our staff is phenomenal. And sometimes 2-3 years after a baby is adopted, our staff will still be involved with our clients. And, you know, biological mothers even get to decide how they want to communicate with that new family. Sometimes they trade letters. Sometimes they have actual visits. And so, you know, there's just a lot of different nuances in terms of the whole adoption process. But again, I just marvel at the great hearts that our child welfare workers have in dealing with these families.
And to go along with that, we have separate birth parent workers and adoptive family workers. And so the birth parent workers are working with these birth parents, hopefully during the pregnancy, because sometimes we get calls from the hospital where someone has not called an agency, but they are considering adoption.
Okay.
And so we still do the same work with them, but it's just in a quicker manner. But if we have have an opportunity to meet with them while they're pregnant, they go through everything with them. If they come to us regarding parenting, we still show them that there is an option of adoption. If they come to us for adoption, we still talk about parenting, because we really want them to look at 5 years from now, look back and say, I made the best decision I could at that time under my circumstances.
Right.
And so the workers really work with them and really get to know them. And so when they are talking to them about now it's time to choose the family, they've already discussed with the worker what they're hoping for. And when it happens every time, when they are looking at the profiles, and we'll tell them, pick, your first, second, and third choice, just because we have 4 offices, and another birth mother could be, it doesn't happen very often, but she could be looking at the profiles on the same day, and we don't want just one family chosen for both of them, you know?
Right.
So they do that, and they will always say, you know, sometimes they don't even know why. They just are like, this is the family, and they're positive. And then they say, I like this family, and I like this family, and they can be my second and third choice, but this is the family. My first choice is it. And they just feel that bond immediately.
Wow. Now, what about, say a couple is considering adoption. I have heard horror stories of people, you know, that have waited and waited, and then they've had setbacks, or they weren't approved for whatever reason. And maybe that has to do more with out of country. But maybe you can talk to us about the process of adoption. Where do they even start?
Well, for us, we have an informational meeting, and I will meet with couples one-on-one anytime throughout the month. But we do have a set monthly meeting, and it's always the first Tuesday of the month at 6 o'clock in the evening. And so people can come, and to me, that's the first step. They come and they hear about our program, and sometimes they've been to other agencies, or sometimes we are the first one, and then they're going to go listen to another agency. And I feel like it's like choosing a doctor or a lawyer. There are other people that do what we do, and you want to pick who you connect with. And so after they come to us, and I explain the process to them, and how the birth parents interact with us and how they interact with us, then they send their application in, and then depending on our list, because we don't want to have too many adoptive parents on the list, just growing more and more and more, because it just becomes too overwhelming for
right.
the birth parents to look at that many, then we will put them on a waiting list, and then as we have placements, then we will study the next family. So after they're studied, then they are put in, they do their profile, and then once they do that, then they are available for a birth parent to choose them. And some families are chosen 2 weeks after their home study is done, and some have waited as long as 3 years. And it is not because one is more attractive than the other. It is not because one has a child and one doesn't. It is not any of the things that you might think of. It is just that birth mom connects with this particular family, and they have no idea how long families have waited. And so, like I said earlier, when that longer waiting family gets a child, they always say, okay, now I get it, because my baby just wasn't born yet.
It was the perfect match. Mm-hmm. Alan, do you have a comment on that?
No, I think Debbie did a great job explaining that. I was just going to mention, I have our 2011 statistics here, and that in 2011, we did 11 inter-country adoption placements for international, and we had 27 families waiting at that time for adoption, and 35 domestic adoptions were completed in that year. So, and that kind of ebbs and flows. Like right now, I know international adoption is really hard because major parts of the world are shut down at the moment. But again, all of our adoptions are done on a sliding fee scale, because our point is not just a financial one. Our point is that loving Christian parents get kids and get to be everything that God intends for them to be.
Absolutely. Well, you're listening to Faith and Family here on KFUO. We're talking with Reverend Alan Erdman, the president of and CEO of Lutheran Family and Children's Services, and also Debbie Shalom, director of Child Welfare Department in St. Louis. And if you have a question or comment for either of them, or maybe you'd like to share your adoption story with our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Call 800-730-2727, or you can email your questions or comments to family@kfuo.org. We'll be addressing all of those coming up on the second half of the show. So get those questions and comments ready now, and we'd be glad to hear from you. I was also going to ask, what are some of the problems that can come up that may hold up the process of the adoption?
Well, if you're talking domestic, there usually aren't any pitfalls. The process, I think, that is most frustrating for families is if our list is full and they have to wait to be studied. Because by the time they come to us and are coming to the informational meetings and applying, they are past ready to be parents. And so to be told that now you may have to wait a year before we can do your home study is very frustrating. So I think that is something that is frustrating, but it's not really anything on their part that is a problem. Really, we are looking at safe homes. I always tell people we're not coming in with a white glove to see if you dusted, because that's not important. I'm not looking under your beds or in your closets. Really, we're just trying to make sure that the home is safe and that a baby would have room to wiggle and, you know, crawl and that kind of thing in that home. More of the pitfalls come with the inter-country adoptions, and that is because of countries closing and then reopening.
Right.
And we don't know about it until it's happening. I mean, we have no forewarning. So somebody can be waiting for a child, for example, with Russia, and then Russia can close, and they have done that now. And you can be in the middle of it and have been waiting 3 years, and you have to completely start over. You have to choose another country and then do that paperwork over and then do it again. So that part can be really frustrating. But I don't want to give the impression that international adoption is not worth it. It is. It's just that there are some things out of our control that can come up that really can make for a very long delays.
Yeah, probably the one thing I've seen that's a little harder, when people are not real open to what kind of children they will consider. So, for instance, if somebody walks in and says, I want to adopt a little boy who's got blonde hair and blue eyes, is going to be 6'1" and play collegiate basketball, it's a little tough meeting that order. Whereas for parents who come in and say, you know, I want to adopt a healthy child to love, that's a whole different ballgame. I'm sure Debbie's seen a lot of these.
Well, and I just want to say it's even beyond that, because many years ago, when being a single parent was a huge no-no and there were a lot more adoptions, you almost could say, I want somebody that looks like my husband and I. But the reality of today is it goes way beyond looks. You have to be open-minded to any kind of mental illness, any kind of drug or alcohol use. I tell families, of course, if you were to get pregnant, you know that you wouldn't use any drugs or alcohol. But look at your extended family. Look on both sides of your family. There is probably going to be someone in your family that has suffered from depression, because that's pretty common.
Right.
There's going to be somebody that's probably an alcoholic, mm-hmm. whether they're diagnosed or not. No child comes without some sort of genetic stuff in their background. And I try to encourage them to be open-minded, because everybody wants a healthy child, and that is a wonderful thing to want and to work towards. But if you're not open to the mother smoking any cigarettes or drinking anything, because a lot of times the birth mothers take care of themselves after they find out that they're pregnant.
Sure.
But the first couple of months, they might not know.
Right.
And so if you're not open to anything, that could make your wait longer. Because we try to build a really good rapport with the birth mothers, so that they will be honest with us, because there's no way for us to check that. We will not know if she smoked or drank in the first 2 months.
Right.
So what we try to impose upon her is that you are going through this because you want something better for your child. The best thing you can do is be completely honest, because then we can give that information to the adoptive parents. They can educate themselves about that, and then they will be the best parents to your child. So that's what we want. We want every adoption to be successful.
Well, what about, cost? You know, you hear of some that they end up spending a lot of money with doing this. What kind of fees are involved in, a regular adoption?
Well, as I said, Liz, we'd use a sliding fee scale so that an adoption could cost anywhere from $8,000 to $20,000, but there's a lot of factors in there. The state also offers adoption tax credits to help families, and it's kind of interesting because every adoption's different. I've seen adoptions where churches have gotten together to pay the fee for families.
That's a wonderful idea.
You know, and mm-hmm. they just bring that check in and say, we want to make sure this happens. And so, and again, it's not about just the money. It's about, we think this is our mission, is to make sure that kids get put in forever families. And our child welfare workers go out of their ways to make sure that that happens for families, because it's not just a financial issue. It's a matter of faith, that we think this is what God wants us to do, and that's why Lutheran Family mm-hmm. and Children's Services exists.
And also, along with the fees, is they pay for as they go, meaning you pay the application fee, then you pay the home study fee, and then you pay when your home study is completed. If you're not, you don't pay the big chunk of money until you get a baby. And so if during that time period while you're waiting, you find a child through another avenue, or you become pregnant, or whatever, you might move away.
Right.
You don't have to pay that big chunk, because you are paying for the services that you receive.
Okay, so it sounds like there's lots of options, and it's not just a big chunk of money all at once. So that's wonderful. All right, well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the wonderful rewards of adoption with Reverend Alan Erdman and also Debbie Shalom, and we'll learn what other services the Lutheran Family Services offers, and talk about more about adoption. Coming up tomorrow on Faith and Family, we're also going to hear the story of how God brought two people together through adoption. We'll be right back when we come back from the break. And welcome back to Faith and Family here at KFUO. I'm Liz Hoffman. We're discussing adoption this week and the joys, processes, challenges, and all of the things that come with adoption. We would love for you, our listeners, to get in on the discussion. So we hope that you'll give us a call with your questions or comments, or email us from St. Louis, 314-505-7850. Or if you're outside of St. Louis, call 800-730-2727. Or email your questions and comments to family@kfuo.org. We're going to also have a link to the Lutheran Family and Children's Services on kfuo.org under the Faith and Family page. Alan, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what the organization offers.
Well, actually, we'll go back just a couple years. The year is 1868. It was a very good year.
Just a few years
yeah.
back.
And there was a dying Civil War soldier in St. Louis, and you know when you're dying, you always call for your Lutheran pastor. And that pastor was a man by the name of Johann Binger, and Binger ministered to this man and then asked him, is there anything that else I can do for you? And the guy says, well, I have a 10-year-old son. I don't have anybody to care for him. Will you take him in? And that is how the Lutheran Orphans Home started in 1868. And, you know, Lutherans are pretty sharp people because before Binger knew it, he had five kids that had been dropped off for him to care for. And the Lutherans started sending money, and the rest is history. And that's actually how we started doing child welfare and adoption work, is up until the late 1960s, the Lutheran Orphans Home here in St. Louis, which is now DePere City Hall, functioned, and thousands of kids came through that orphan's home and were taken care of as an expression of faith. And that's really what Lutheran Family and Children's Services is all about, is we're an expression of caring for the most fragile parts of life where people are very vulnerable and are having problems, and we're there to bring them hope and healing and to make sure they get back to their churches for good word and sacrament ministry. Our tagline at Lutheran Family is we grow hope. Because hope is that promise that you do have a tomorrow, you have a future, you can make decisions about your life, and you can move forward. And a lot of people who come to us don't feel any hope, and our mission is to engender that in them again. And we do that through our work in community services, mm-hmm. through our work in counseling, through our work in child welfare. We are also the FEMA disaster responders for the state of Missouri. So we have quite a bit of stuff going on at Lutheran Family. We have regional offices in Springfield, Cape Girardeau, and Columbia on top of St. Louis. And we're that expression of care, God's care for people at the most fractured points of life.
I think a lot of people think of us as an adoption agency, but we really do much more than that.
Yeah, matter of fact, probably 80% of the people that Lutheran Family serves are not Lutheran. That we are there truly to be an expression of care, you know, for very hard situations. And we're there because we think it's our mission, and it's an expression of our faith as to how we do the work of the agency.
And I was thinking that adoption, I'm assuming, can easily get into all kinds of sticky situations. Have you ever had a mother that maybe changed her mind after the adoption was over? She comes back and says, hey, I want my kid back.
Well, that brings on a whole big topic. First of all, if it is done the right way, legally go through the court and it's completed, she may want the child back, but legally there's nothing that can be done. You know, she would not be able to. That's why we always encourage people, when you are not going through an agency and you are trying to do this on your own, just make sure that everything is done accurately. Most of the time, and I can honestly say almost, you know, probably 99% of the time, the birth parents really want this adoption to be successful. And they, you know, they may wish later, wow, I'm in a better place now. I would have been able to take care of him or her.
Right.
But I wasn't then, and so I made the right choice. The only time that it is possible for one of the birth parents to change their mind is the trend has changed, where it used to be that when babies were born, they were then placed in foster care, and then once their parental rights of the biological parents were terminated, then the adoptive family would get the call and they would get the baby. Now, most birth parents want their child to go directly to the adoptive parents, and most of the adoptive parents don't want to miss out on anything from the beginning with the baby. But when they do that, that's called legal risk, and that is because her rights can't be terminated at the hospital. So there is a whole process that has to be done that can take anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 weeks. And so during that time, she or he has every right to change their mind. And what we try to explain to all of the parties is, if you are having any doubts, you know, it would be better for the baby to be placed in foster care, so, because that's a neutral setting. Those foster parents will just love on that baby until we tell them that the baby's going back to the biological parents, or the baby is moving on with the adoptive parents. But like I said, some really want the baby from the hospital. And I have been a part of one time where the birth father came back and said, you know, I do, and the baby had been placed for 2 weeks. And that was just awful. I mean, it's not awful for the biological parent, because he has every right to do that.
Sure.
But it's awful to call the adoptive parent and say, you know, she has to be returned to the biological father. And they understood, because all of our families, we go over and over and over with them what legal risk is. And so they did know that. And I can say, fortunately, they did get another child eventually.
So the story still had a happy ending. That's good. Now, what about the legal issues? What, I guess, are the suggested steps that someone needs to take in adopting?
For the adoptive parents?
Yes.
Well, they can go through an agency like us, and we will help them. The only time that they will need an attorney would be when they... after they receive a child, there's a six-month period that doesn't have anything to do with the birth parents. It's a six-month period. Instead of us just handing you the baby and say, have a good life, we continue with three visits during that six-month period and just continue the adoption education with you and check on the child and check on you to support you. Is there anything else you need? You know, most of parenting an adopted child is as if you gave birth to that child. But there is that small percentage that talks about being open and honest and being excited that there's two ways to form families. You can do it through birth or through adoption. And ours happens to be through adoption. And we are so thrilled, and we want to celebrate that. And being very honest with the child from day one that what the word adoption is. You know, you say things to babies that they don't understand. And one of those words can be adoption, can be birth parents, can be the day we got you, can be any of those things that will, as the child grows and learns, you just add to that, you know, with their maturity and how much they can understand until Sure. they understand their story. And it's an exciting story, and it is their background. And so we encourage all of that. So that goes along with that education. But we also talk about bonding and attachment, and if there's any special needs, you know, we try to be very helpful with resources and support groups and all of that. So that all goes into that, and then we go to court to finalize, and that's when their worker will go with them, and an attorney will be there, and another attorney is assigned for the child, called a guardian ad litem.
Okay.
And so it's a quick, easy process. It takes about 10 minutes, and the judges and the attorneys are thrilled, because this is a joyful court hearing as opposed to some of the more difficult ones.
Right.
And everybody is excited, and the adoptive parents are nervous because they've never done it before, but
Sure.
we always tell them, you don't have anything to be nervous about, because by the time we get to court, it's a done deal.
Right.
And it's they usually get pictures taken with the judge afterwards, and it's and everybody loves to see the kids. You know,
oh, yeah.
the babies might be around 6 months old, but they could be older, because maybe you got a child
Sure.
that was older, and
Sure.
and the court loves to see the kids.
Wow, that's
wonderful. We'll put a plug in here for there's about 1,600 kids in Missouri right now who are waiting to be adopted, and I'll demonstrate the issue, and that is, for all of you out there in radio land, why don't you call in right now and we'll send you home with a brand new 15-year-old.
Why not?
Nobody's calling. I don't get it. But that is, you know, these kids desperately want to have a family that they call their own. And a lot of people seem to think, well, I can only adopt an infant, and that's just not true.
It's not true. We have a contract with the state, so the kids that have been removed from their homes because of abuse and neglect, the first goal is always reunification with the biological parents. So we have workers that are working with the kids, with the foster parents, and with the biological parents to try to help them with whatever the issue was as to why the children were removed. But some of those will never be rectified. And in those cases, the kids are available for adoption. And we desperately want them to be adopted. And the reason why is because they need to experience living in a normal, safe environment. They need to have parents that love them unconditionally, where hopefully that will break the cycle for them and they will learn how to be a good parent.
Right.
They need to have that demonstrated to them.
Well, and even I was thinking the extended family in preparing for this week, yesterday, Easter, you know, I'm with my family and I started thinking about what happens to the 16-year-old that never has been adopted. Whenever they do reach adulthood, where do they go for Easter? You know,
that is my soft spot, is the kids that we say they aged out and they were never adopted. It's exactly what you just said, Liz. I think about all the times that you want as a young person to call your parents, whether it's because you need help or whether it's because you're excited about something. You might want to say something about, I have a boyfriend or I have a girlfriend or I just got engaged or I was on the side of the road last night because I had a flat tire and, you know, I want to call my dad or I want to, you know, there's just so many things besides where do they go for Thanksgiving dinner? What did they do for Christmas? And of course, they may make friends, and that's what we hope, and they may kind of, you know, come to their friends, families, things, but it's not the same as having your own family. Having that hub to go back to, no matter where you go in life, no matter what you do, you always have that safe place to go back to.
Absolutely. All right, listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have a story? Maybe you were adopted or you know someone or you've been affected by an adoption or you have something in your family. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 314-505-7850. If you're outside of St. Louis, 800-730-2727. I was also going to ask you, how do the two of you, I guess, work with this and you see maybe some of them that aren't adopted right away? Does that affect you personally or do you go home and think, you know, almost like going to the pet store and I couldn't get that puppy? I mean, is it?
No, just from my perspective, and Debbie and the staff are much closer to this than I am, but I think you celebrate every gain and every adoption as a win, and you have the possibility for every child who's not adopted to be adopted. Because there's a lot of heart-wrenching stuff out there. And, I mean, I think we all want kids to have every opportunity they can have in life and to grow up to be the people that God intends for them to be. And that can only happen if we all pitch in and do what we need to do.
And I would just add that the kids, some of them, every adult in their life has let them down. And so they don't trust. And they sometimes will sabotage a placement in a foster home because they are expecting those adults to let them down, and they don't want to get close to you because that just hurts more. So they might raise hell a little bit to test you. And why I'm bringing that up is because when you say, do some of the stories get to us? They do. You know, we've got a couple of kids that have been in pre-adopt homes, and then eventually, for various reasons, and not always because of the child, sometimes it's something to do with the family, but for various reasons, it does not work. And it is that's hard. It is really hard because we get really excited when we have when we find a home for some of these older kids. And we just get very excited and we do everything we can do to make it successful. And so it's hard when it, if it doesn't work out. Now, fortunately, many of them do work out. So, like Alan said, everything we celebrate, every step that goes towards permanency, you know, a forever home, that's what we celebrate.
I know adoptive parents who celebrate Gotcha Day.
Gotcha Day, okay.
And Gotcha Day is the day that the adoption was finalized, and it's as important in that family as a birthday. Because it's the day that a child became a part of a family for forever. I'll never forget it. About 3 years ago, I saw an adoption down in Columbia, Missouri, of a little 10-year-old boy. And the adoptive father is this huge dude, about 6'4", and he just picked that little boy up and said, I want you to know now, there's no way you can get out of this family. We're always going to love you. We're never going to give up on you, so you better get used to it.
Oh, wow. Talk about goosebumps.
Oh, it was a neat moment. Just was a really phenomenal moment. I mean, he just spelled it out, and you know, that there was no way that kid could get out of that family.
And yeah. I know of another one who now is in college, and when I talked to him, he said he had been in about 6 foster homes before he came to the last one, but he didn't know it was the last one.
Right.
And the mom said to him, you know, the very first night, I know you don't know me, but I'm telling you right now, this is your last home. You will grow up, and this is going to be your home no matter what you do. And he says, believe me, I tested them. You know, I was not the easiest child, but they proved me right. And he's now, he goes around and talks, and we'll talk about his story because he says, I am thrilled that I was finally adopted.
That's wonderful. And I was thinking that, you know, once the children are adopted, it's quite a big change for the parents and the child and maybe their siblings involved.
Absolutely.
What, is there services available for that, or is that something that's a norm to have counseling for the whole family?
Yes. For one thing, the adoption worker does a lot of that with the family, talks again about attachment, talks about adjustment.
Right.
When a new family member comes, you know, there's debate on whether you should keep the same birth order, meaning if you have biological or other adopted children, should you always adopt younger? And I would say most of the time that's probably makes things easier, but there are families that can that didn't do that, that adopted an older child, and they've adjusted and they've done well. But most of the time, people like to stay in birth order. And so, yes, there's those services that the adoption worker will provide, but we also have counselors, and we have what we call an adoption-focused mental health provider, and that really is dealing directly with the kids and the parents of children that are out of their original home, whether they're in foster care or whether they're in an adoptive home.
Okay. And what would you say are some of the difficulties that an adopted child may face, maybe at school or socially?
Well, fortunately, adoption is pretty common these days. And so when I'm talking to the potential adoptive families, I always ask, do you know of other people that have an adopted child? And they almost always do. Many times it's even in their family. So one thing that we encourage is that if you are, try to be around other people that have adopted, you know, seek out a support group, and there are some in St. Louis. Seek out those kind of things, especially if you are adopting a child of a different race. You need to seek out things to learn that child's culture.
Sure.
To really not make him or her be the only one of that race. You know, what about your church? What about your neighborhood? What about the school the child goes to? What about your extended family? How will this child be treated? Mm-hmm. And we really try to have them be the child. Look at it from the child's point of view. If the grandparents are going to show any favoritism to the biological grandchildren, then we need to talk about that. You know, it's not just what the two of you think, but it's the whole surrounding of what this child will experience.
It's kind of interesting because I've watched families who have adopted internationally who try to keep up the traditions of the country the child has come from. And so it's very fascinating. For instance, babies who've come from China, those adoptive parents quite often will get together with other families who've adopted from China and have their own cultural rituals and things that they want to expose their child to help them to understand who they are. And I think it's a very healthy process.
It's very healthy. And one thing that I really like is many of the families try to go back when the child gets older, try to go back to their country so that the child can really see and learn where they came from. It's a lot more than just looking at it in a book. And so that's the goal for many families is to save up the money and take a family trip eventually when the child's old enough to understand.
Sure. I think that would be great, yeah, and really helpful for the child as well. What about whenever these children grow up a little bit more and maybe they're interested in finding out who their biological parents are? What happens in a case like that? Are you all of assistance?
Yes. It's called searching. And what I talk to with the adoptive parents that are just checking into adoption is be open-minded to that. You know, it is not, the children are not trying to replace you by finding their biological parents. They are curious. They want to know, is this woman still alive? You know, whatever happened? Did she have more kids? Do I have some half-siblings out there?
Right.
And it's a curiosity thing. We always say, you know, if you start talking about adoption from the very beginning, then that child will know that he or she can come and talk to you about this. So if they are curious and they say, I wonder what happened, you could say, well, honey, I don't know. I mean, or unless you do, because a lot of them stay in touch now over the years. But if you don't know, you can say, I don't know, but I will help you find out. And there's certain legalities that have to be followed, such as they have to wait until they are a certain age, and then they have to go through court and ask, and the court will tell them, okay, you can check with Lutheran Family and Children's Services, and then that comes to us, and then we look it up. But if the parents feel like, okay, it's not the biological parents versus us, it's just this many more people to love this child, and if you support your child in that, it can be an adventure, you know, and you need to be there for your child because you don't know what the results are going to be. It could be a happy ending and they could have a bond with the with the biological parents that they met, or maybe the biological parents have passed away, or maybe they are really struggling and they never were able to, you know, to get their act together. And that's hard for a child to see. So the adoptive parents really need to be there for that child. And when I say child, I'm talking young adult. They still need their parents, and it's a great thing to do together.
I was going to mention that our auction chairs for our annual auction, which happens every August, last year, were two men who were both adopted as infants. And the one of them got up and told his story about being with his biological mother when she died and how meaningful that was to him to have met her and to have had time with her when she went through that process. And so there are just some really great stories out there.
I've got a great story, too, but I don't know if we have enough
time. Yeah, we're starting to run short on time. Well, listen, I thank you both so much for joining us today. It's a topic that I think we could go on and on with. And just so many different areas of adoption that are of interest to everyone and I think affect everyone because everyone either knows someone that's been adopted or that's searching to adopt. So this has been some great information. We'd like you to remember that tomorrow on Faith and Family, we're going to talk with a mother and a daughter who have been connected by adoption. They're in Massachusetts. They've got a great story of how God has brought them together. And we thank you all for listening to Faith and Family. We'll We'll be back tomorrow at 11 o'clock Central Time. And remember that you can join in on the show tomorrow as well in St. Louis, 314-505-7850. Outside of St. Louis, 800-730-2727. You can also email us, family@kfuo.org. Thanks for joining us and have a great day.